When most people say ghetto, they mean unrefined, low class, cheap, or inferior, especially when it comes to Black people.
At least until it's co-opted by everybody else and suddenly becomes pop culture.
But we're reclaiming ghetto and rejecting white supremacist norms regarding how we're supposed to look, think, or be.
And we aren't waiting for Black ingenuity to be colonized to celebrate it. Absolute means to the largest degree possible, having unlimited power and influence, or simply unrestrained.
I'm Malcolm.
I'm Sade. And this is... Well, this is my little sister, Lola. She's about to bring it home for y'all. What this is, Lola?
This is... Absolute Ghetto.
Hello, everybody. We are back. Welcome to episode 9 of The Absolute Ghetto.
Welcome back, everyone. So we have some things.
I mean, 8. Whatever. True.
You get the gist. So we have some things. We have a lot of things, actually, that we wanted to discuss. So we're going to jump right into it. So the purpose of this episode, so I'm sure everybody's heard about the release of the coronavirus vaccine. They're trying to get rid of it. They're trying to be done with it. Everyone is over it. We've been in the house for too long. And so
I'm over it, yes. Too. I am sick and tired. I already told Malcolm that I'm not... Actually, we're going to get into this later. Let me stop.
Yeah, we're going to get into it. We're going to dig in. We're going to talk about kind of like why there's been this mixed response to the coronavirus, specifically within our community, the Black community, and like some of what's informing some of the negative, more negative responses to news about the release of the vaccine.
Right. As this pandemic has gone on, first, Black people were skeptical. Actually, I remember at the beginning, people were said that Black people couldn't get coronavirus. People were like whispering that on Twitter and stuff.
The good old days.
But and then it turned out that was very wrong that we could. Unfortunately, we became one of the most, the Black community is the most severely impacted community by race, by the coronavirus. So we want to talk about like why Black people have had skepticism around this vaccine and the whole virus in general, because Black communities just have so much negative experiences with putting trust in healthcare professionals in the United States.
Mm-hmm,
so we want to like validate those concerns and grievances and talk about ways we can improve the damaged relationship between the healthcare system in the U.S. That's the CDC and different organizations like that, hospitals and private practices, all of that. You want to give them the roadmap?
Yeah. Okay. So this is what we're going to do. So first, we're going to talk about medical racism, you know, everyone's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get into some of the disease-related conspiracy theories and what I like to call spiritual or ideological hustlers. Then we'll get into the impact of COVID-19 on the Black community. And after that, how Black leaders and healthcare professionals are trying to improve skeptics' trust in the science behind the vaccine. And lastly, we're going to discuss potential concerns about the distribution of the vaccine, which will be informed by previous research and some of the work we're going to build up throughout this entire discussion. So yeah, like I said, got a full little program for you guys. We're going to try to do our best to make sure that this makes as much sense as possible.
And we're going to be back with the first section, medical racism, after the break.
All right. Medical racism. Let's go.
All right. As many people know, the U.S. has a nasty history with discrimination in the medical field and also testing in all fields.
But yes, we're talking about medicine right now.
Yeah. and unethical testing on Black communities. And mm-hmm. we just want to talk about some of those historic things that sort of contribute to the reason why Black people have so much distrust in the medical system.
We'll start with the development of gynecology, which completely owes its existence, at least in the Western sense, to Black women. This man, mm-hmm. Dr. Sims, was actually operating on Black women without sedating them, without any painkillers or anything to alleviate the pain, to see, you know, what was going on when it came to women's reproductive health. And lots of discoveries were made that are very productive, but at the cost of Black women's safety, at the cost of their lives, at the cost of their health. Black women, in this case, being used as test subjects to advance science and to advance medicine. And even though it's important to say there were productive discoveries made from it, but again, Black people are not credited for it. Black people were not treated ethically during this process. And Black people still, specifically Black women, do not receive adequate medical care from the industry to this day. Meanwhile, there are the whole reasons that we have most of the findings that we know that have completely shaped the study of gynecology. And so that's just one of the things. And another one is Tuskegee.
Yeah, Tuskegee experiments, which are pretty notorious. One of the most cited incidents of medical racism in America. So basically, in this study, they recruited, and this was a 40-year study from 1970s. It was in 1932 to 1975 or 76, something around those lines. Uh-huh. But notable that this was going to the 70s, 1970. Like, that's crazy.
Like, our parents were alive. Some of our aunts and uncles was alive.
Yeah. Some of y'all was alive listening to this.
True,
like,
true.
It's crazy. And so basically, the study recruited 600 Black men. And of those Black men, 399 were diagnosed with syphilis. And 201 were in a control group without the disease. And so they basically lied to these people. And they had these signs up in the Tuskegee area that said, oh, you know, basically like, come one, come all. We will be providing free health care for people who are afflicted with certain diseases, and you know, just come. They wanted to test for bad blood, actually. So it was like testing for bad blood, and even without symptoms, you might still have bad blood, so you should come anyway, even if you don't have symptoms, and bring your families. So they did like this big recruitment effort to basically to get as many people to come to the study off of a complete lie, like just a total lie, just no morals, no ethics, just why, you know, and this is the CDC. This is the CDC, the same people who are feeding us this information about COVID-19 now. This is the same organization who was helping to conduct this study. So that is very significant. We have to look at the CDC now. We have to trust what they say, but this history is there. So basically, they never told the men with syphilis that they were not being treated, but they were simply being watched until they died and their bodies are being examined for the ravages of the disease. And so, yeah, pretty horrifying study that was done basically using Black people, real people, as lab rats and being lied to about being treated. Like, letting a disease ravage their body until they die. There's studies that are done where people have diseases or they have afflictions, but of course, ethically, at least nowadays, you can tell someone, okay, we're gonna put you in a control group and you're not gonna get the vaccine or you're not gonna get this treatment and we're gonna see what happens. And someone may agree to that for whatever their reasons may be, but they have to agree to that. And you cannot lie to them about the reason why they're being tested or what they're being tested or what is happening to them. You can't lie ethically, right? I mean, it's extremely illegal to do something like that.
You know, a quick interjection on that, on something that's happening to this day in the realm of social science or research control trials. The one I'm thinking of specifically has to do with malaria. The nets that they use to ward away the malaria carrying mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. And it actually is effective in reducing the amount of malaria transmission in regions where that's prominent. But like, they actually did a research control trial where they just were like, we're going to only give it to these people and not give it to these people and see what happens. And that came out like maybe a decade ago at the most. Mm-hmm. I'll pull up the study, but like, it's pretty well known, like in different social science fields. But like, I bring that up to say that to this day, because of imperialism, because of racism, lots of white scientists who feel like they're benevolent go into these communities and still do these very ethically questionable experiments that they feel like they're doing people a favor, because it's like, oh, they're so poor, they were going to die from it anyway. So it's not it's perfectly fine. And that went through the IRB, the International Research Review Board, to see, to make sure that it's approved and that it's ethical. But like, if white supremacists are the ones who are controlling what's approved, it's not surprising that white supremacy is what's getting approved. But just bringing that up to say stuff still happens.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Yeah.
Another thing that has created a lot of distrust in the medical system is the history of eugenics, right? Doctors in the U.S. practicing white supremacist, well, they practice medicine that is intended to eliminate certain kinds of traits and certain kinds of characteristics and genes that they consider unfavorable for whatever reason in that situation.
Yeah, so race science, first of all, is pseudoscience. It's not empirically sound and has been decried in the scientific community because it doesn't really have any basis in fact or reality. But basically, like, the whole purpose of it was to establish why white people were superior. And so you also have, in line with eugenics, because there are certain inferior people, you have the sterilization of certain groups of people. And one of those groups of people is Black women. You know, a very notable case is when a woman thought she was signing up to get her daughter some birth control, and they actually sterilized her teenage daughter. There's not everyone at this point, most people know that there's not really genetic differences between humans.
Not in terms of race, not along the lines of race, other than the way we look.
Yeah, no, that's
other than the way we look. Yeah.
Right. No, like, as far as like there being different genetic codes between white people and Black people, that is just simply not true. Yeah, so it was completely arbitrary, and they were using this pseudoscience to basically enforce quote-unquote treatment towards Black people that was harmful and that prevented them from having rights to their own body, having rights to proper medical care, and having rights to decide their own futures, because Black people were viewed as deficient.
So this is another situation like Tuskegee, where it's like these people are being directly harmed through keeping them in the dark, you know? So that's something that I feel like we have to emphasize here, is because the CDC can say all this stuff and doctors can say all these things, but African Americans know that these studies were conducted by keeping us in the dark. So obviously there's so much, they can say whatever they want on the TV. There's still going to be Black people who are like, oh, well, they're just keeping us in the dark. Or they could just be keeping us in the dark. So we have that history to go back and, like, validate why Black people still feel like that today. Even though you'd be like, oh, these are doctors, this is the CDC. What are they not saying, is what some people might say. You know, like, what are they keeping from us?
And it's crazy because, like, eugenics and race science, even though it's been formally decried and rebuked, still has traces today. And one of those things is that Black people experience pain in a different way, that we're not treated. I actually have a personal story of when I got really, really sick when I was like 8 or something like that. And we went to the doctor, and the doctor was not trying to test me. He was like, oh, he's faking. He's just trying to get out of school. And there was like no reason for him to say that. And my mom was very insistent. And it ended up that I don't know what was wrong with me. I had asthma or something. Like, there was just stuff going on with my lungs, and they just gave me some medicine to help take care of that. But like, they were trying not to treat me as a little kid, because there was just this idea that we were trying to scam the system.
Yeah, you're trying to come and get drugs. That's another thing. Like,
because of
stigma around drug use in the Black community, even though data shows that Blacks are no more abusers of drugs than white people. But there's like a stigma that's like, oh, Blacks will fake certain symptoms so they can certain drugs. And you know, of course, that's something that a lot of different communities deal with, but Black people one specifically, that it's more likely that you may encounter someone who thinks you're coming just because you want to get some Xanax or you want to get some whatever.
And because of like that legacy of dehumanizing Black people, there's like this idea that we are like animalistic, or that like that's part of like the that we don't experience pain the same way, is that we have this resiliency because we're beastly in a way. It's what it's rooted in. And so like that's still a thing today.
It's been well documented. I know this simply from having a lot of friends who have either completed or are currently in medical school, how a lot of medical programs actually have medical racism in their curriculum. So they're actually taught in a lot of courses about pain and stuff. Oh, if a Black person says their pain level is like, for example, a 7, then maybe make make that register it on your chart or make it in your head as more of a 4. But, you know, if a white person says there's a 7, it's probably a 7 or probably an 8. Or so there's medical professionals who believe that Black people exaggerate their pain or can tolerate more pain. Therefore, because they can tolerate more and they can they're stronger, then like don't take their, you know, cries for help as seriously, because you're probably going to over-treat them if you listen to them, if you listen to just what is coming out of their mouth. But that's completely untrue. There's no evidence that Black people have any like higher pain tolerance, you know. And then I have like a little anecdote actually from my mom. Well, this is not as related to like the pain level, but like the treatment, how they won't listen to like your concerns. Like my mom, when she was a young girl, like since she was like a teenager, like an older teenager, like around 17, 18, she had these tumors in her breasts that were benign. They were growing, but they were benign. Like they were not cancerous. But the doctor said that they could become cancerous and they could become dangerous, you know, if they got cancerous and they didn't catch it. Despite, you know, research that my mom and her mother had done, like regarding, you know, how it's possible to live with benign tumors, and her, you know, white doctors insisted that she needed to have, you know, these tumors removed immediately. And so when she was 18, she went into surgery and basically had her breast removed. They completely changed her body for the rest of her life in a way that may not have been necessary. If they had educated her more on different options, or even given those options to her and let her choose properly, then she may have been able to go a different route with her health. But, you know, that decision was kind of made for her by like insisting, this is what you need, you know, before her tumors even became cancerous. So
it's like this overall thing of like dehumanizing Black people, and oh my gosh, call back to the last episode, but also infantilizing them, where it's like, oh, they're not smart enough to make sound decisions, so we're just going to have to do it for them. You know what I mean? And so it's not even thought to give Black people full agency and autonomy over their body. And the last thing, I think for this section, there is many, many more things that we could talk about, but I think we'll stop here for now on medical racism, is this practice of triaging, which is, you know, that's another conversation about the ethics of triaging, but I want to talk about specifically, triaging, for anyone who does not know, it's a common medical practice where like you try to treat people when you have limited resources, you try to treat the people who you think are most likely to survive. And with, as far as the resources of limited medical equipment, limited time. So that's triaging broadly. Mm-hmm. So there actually was this instance during Hurricane Katrina, and it was very, very famous. Feel free to look it up. Some of you probably heard of it, but in Memorial Hospital, basically the hospital got stranded. It was completely a situation of limited supplies, limited resources in general. And so the head nurse at the time made the decision that she was going to not resuscitate certain people. She was not going to save certain people because they were too far gone. She thought she was doing the right thing. There's a whole philosophical discussion of if that was the right thing. But it came out a little bit later that some of the people that she, they basically like chose to let them die, that some of them could have been saved. You know what I mean? That it wasn't as bad as they thought it was. And a lot of that has to do with race and like how Black people are seen as being sicker too. It's so crazy how it always works against us. But like Black people are seen as being more predisposed to illness. That's within Hurricane Katrina, which happened, you know, over a decade ago. But like right now, earlier this year, there was videos that came out on social media of different doctor or different like nurses. They were nurses talking about how there were these Black patients who could have been saved, but they were not being treated. They were being completely neglected. And the doctors, they said their doctors are basically saying like, they're not gonna, like Black people aren't surviving this. So there's no point in even trying. Let's go ahead and focus on the people we can save. And so because
rates were higher.
Yeah, it reminds me of like statistical discrimination of like, basically like we're being racist because like, well, we're not gonna hire a Black person because a Black person is less likely to be unqualified, because Black people in general are less likely to be qualified because of racism. So it like it perpetuates the same thing over and over again. And so you have the same thing happening in this practice of triaging, where it's like Black people are more likely to be sicker. because of racism. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be racist. All in all, we do not have a good relationship with the medical industry.
Definitely not. So there's something that this mistrust in medicine breeds, and it's like this desire to find like other leaders and other champions of health in the Black community, and that search for like external resources and what's actually gonna be the best for my health as a Black person, what can make it easier for them to fall victim to believing in potential health scams and health conspiracy theories. And one of the biggest con artists of all in the health conspiracy world is Dr. Sebi. We're sorry, we had to do it. Let's get into it. Malcolm, I know Malcolm is ready to flame Dr. Sebi up, so I'm gonna let you take it.
Go ahead. So I know Dr. Sebi is near and dear to a lot of people's hearts. He was near and dear to Left Eye. That's why she was in Honduras. This is because she went to see Dr. Sebi. He has been beloved by a lot of prominent Black figures for a long time.
And if you don't know, one of his claims to fame is supposedly curing HIV.
Oh my God, it pisses me off. Dr. Sebi, basically, he was telling everyone that he won this court case, and that the U.S. government was trying to take him down. And he said that basically in this court case that he brought such sufficient scientific evidence in the form of like witnesses to his curative powers that like the court had to drop the case. So the whole problem with this is that it is completely untrue. First of all, he was not on trial because he claimed to cure AIDS. He was on trial because he was accused of practicing medicine without having any credentials in medicine. He has absolutely no credentials in studying medicine. But anyways,
one of our favorite YouTubers, Lexual, in a video she did debunking some of his theories and the conspiracy theories about Dr. Sebi, she says like it was impossible for the U.S. government to even find him guilty because what he was practicing wasn't actually considered medicine in a court of law. So there is like no way they could have won the case regardless. It was like, oh, well, this isn't medicine. Okay. Bye.
Exactly. Because that's what that's really important. The case was about him practicing medicine illegally. It was not actually about this idea that he can cure AIDS or not. And also, I want to contextualize that this case happened in the midst of the AIDS pandemic. Lots of people were dying. It was ravaging the Black community specifically. That's what part of like why it's so offensive to me. And it's also parallel to what's going on now, is that you are being a con artist or whatever. Like, that's grimy to me in general. But you're manipulating people's fears in a time where something really dangerous actually is happening, knowing that what you're saying is not true.
No, at the best, he's foolish. At worst, he had malicious intent to just like sort of lie and profit from the lie. At least
actually with Left Eye, there actually is this article that talks about when Left Eye went to visit him in Honduras because she wanted to get healing. She just wanted to get to a better place. And she was more interested in Dr. Sebi's lifestyle advice more so than the herbalistic healing.
Yeah.
And she was shocked when she got there that like, because that was the one thing, like he was supposed to be this like miraculous healer, but also he was supposed to be kind of like the spiritual leader as well, as someone who had this pious way of living that was better for the entire community. And so when she got there, this man was out here sleeping around with young women and being crazy and violating people. And she confronted him on it. And he was like, yeah, no, I be out here sometimes. But, you know, the stuff still works. I'm not sure. I can't reach into his heart. I didn't know him personally. I don't know. I can't say for sure if he believed it or not. But there was definitely a lot of inconsistencies. And he was profiteering from this. Yeah, he was making hella money from these Black celebrities.
I was assuming that he wasn't profiting. I know he was profiting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, money was definitely a motive in what he was doing. And he never hesitated to take advantage of these people who desperately were seeking aid. And one of those people was Michael Jackson. And this is another case against him. And Michael, he made this claim that he cured Michael of his opioid addiction, even though he died from opioid addiction. Like, I just don't understand the hold that this man has on the community. One more thing. So the other thing is that, so let me explain his, like, so some people might have heard about his little herbalistic teaching, but basically it was the idea that the human body was electrical in nature and therefore it could only absorb foods of the same electrical composition.
Yeah.
He called this process chemical affinity, which is wrong.
That's what informed his whole alkaline diet theory.
Yeah. So that is not how the human body works. There's been many tested trials of that's not how the human body works. You can read several books about it. So there's that. Mm-hmm. But to like add insult to injury, he was going to different communities in Africa trying to tell them that their diets are wrong. Because that was one thing that I always found weird. It's like he made it like meat was like the root of all evil. That's what was so wrong with everyone. It was corrupting us physically and spiritually. Mm-hmm. But like there's many, many, I mean, you're part Nigerian. There's many, many African communities that consume meat regularly.
And the thing is, there's nothing wrong with informing people of better ways to eat. But the thing is, his theories weren't based on any science. There weren't credible reasons to switch to a vegetarian or vegan diet. There may be reasons why you want to do it, but just didn't have any valid reasons for it. So he's not who you want to look to if you're like thinking about, oh, why should I go vegan? Why should I be vegetarian? If that's something that you're thinking about, his theories aren't based in any science, unfortunately. Sorry.
And they're not tried and true. And there's actually lots of evidence that they're counterproductive.
Unfortunately, the Black community, you know, has been more susceptible of football victim to like following somebody like Dr. Sebi en masse because they want somebody who is like a champion for our health and really wants the best for us. And he seemed like someone who was providing that for us. Unfortunately, this just wasn't the case, as we explained to you. So, but there's other sort of conspiracy theories that affect the Black community, especially in terms of conversations about the vaccine and vaccines in general, right?
Mm-hmm,
so one of the things that happens sometimes is like faux spirituality, right? And conspiracy theories that are like based in spirituality. So one incident we wanted to bring up was the incident with Letitia Wright, who is an actress. You may remember her from the Black Panther. Yes.
She was my favorite character in that movie. I love Shuri. I love how she portrayed Shuri.
She can still
Shuri.
Be your favorite character. It's okay. It's fiction.
I'm dead. You know, and it's really interesting, like, we're going to definitely have to complicate this conversation a little bit, but right now we're just kind of going through how some of these things are easily debunked and not rooted in anything. But basically the issue with her is she posted this video basically saying that the coronavirus was a conspiracy, or not coronavirus, but that the vaccine was this conspiracy. And like one of the things that really stuck out to me was the transphobic language. Like there was a part in the video where he was like, those trans people, they be saying, I'm a woman, I'm a woman, I'm a woman. And they just keep saying it until people believe it. And that's how he was using that as an analogy to how people were trying to get us to accept vaccines. Also in the video, he like admits to not understanding at all the science of how vaccines work.
And the video also did have the video she shared did mm-hmm. have some science in it where it talked about, oh, these specific genetic materials that are used or mm-hmm. viral materials that are used to make the vaccine are extremely harmful to our bodies. But people interacted with her and they explained, actually, this specific particle they're talking about is used in the creation of the vaccine, but it doesn't actually go in the final vaccine that gets injected into people's bodies. Mm-hmm. So this is not actually completely true, and it won't affect you like if you go and get the actual vaccine, because it won't be in there. So yeah, it's important to fact check everything you see on the internet, because at first glance something may sound credible because this was a scientific fact, but it didn't give enough context of how the vaccine will actually affect your bodies and what will actually be in the final vaccine. So you just have to be careful about those kinds of things, because then you can fall victim to spiritual gaslighting and like the full spirituality.
Where they use spiritual language and references to spiritual practices that are real to peddle lies and conspiracies. You know what I mean? And something else that's strange in a lot of this, because a lot of people will talk about, in our community, we'll talk about autism and talk about the vaccines causing disabilities. And so, one, it's not true. People keep bringing up the autism. That's not even a real conversation. The person who produced that study was fraudulent. They are no longer a doctor. The study was not well created. When it was peer reviewed, mm-hmm. Everyone said in the industry said it was bullshit. So I don't even understand why people are still bringing that up. But even if that were true, do you know how bad some of these things you're getting vaccinated are? Do you know how much havoc things like smallpox, like impose on the body. Like, it's not. And so, like, for you to insinuate that, like,
yo, I was dating this guy, or at least talking to this guy. One time, this nigga told me that he had the mumps.
I'm sorry, what? Why are you laughing? Sir! Why did you laugh? Why is that funny? Why did you laugh at him having the mumps? This sounds awful. Wait, you gotta explain it.
Okay, it wasn't when we were talking. It was like when he was a kid, or was it like, I think he was his early teens he had it. Yeah, I think it was his early teens. So like, he was probably like 13 or 14, 15, something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he had the mumps, and like, the thing is, like, most people get vaccinated for it, but the thing is, he never got the vaccine. I'm just saying that because I was like, you had the mumps, like, it, like, in most people, like, think about it. Think about it, yeah, and like, it was like in like 2015 he had the mumps, like, what the hell. The thing is, most people in our lives, we don't realize it because of, you know, fortunately with vaccines, we don't have to deal with a lot of these things anymore. But like, things like polio and chicken pox and all these things would still be ravaging our communities if it wasn't for vaccines. So the fact that I hear somebody say he had the mumps and I bust out laughing because I've never heard that in my life. I'm like, who gets the mumps?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, that vaccines give us that privilege. So just, you know, just keep that in mind moving forward.
Like, we'll get into it a little bit, but like, it's a difference. Like, even if we take something like Tuskegee, which everyone is rightfully bringing up, the problem with Tuskegee was not the treatment. The problem is that people were not being treated. Like, it's very important to talk about these things. Like, if there is medicine that we know works and fixes people, like, if the medicine works on the white people, it's going to work on us. Like, it's not, we're not that genetically different where it's not going to work on us.
Oh, yeah.
Even like in our, and the examples of medical racism that we listed, a lot of the problems in our community has to be with us not being properly treated. Not that the treatments themselves are evil. And so people use that, the fact that the medical industry has experimented on us, to dispel science and then also assert that they have this spiritual understanding that informs them in a way that no one else understands and that no one can ever question them on. And even after multiple instances of their quote-unquote beliefs not working, that we have to keep believing it because they're divinely appointed. And that's very, very, very dangerous.
They use these spiritual concepts to manipulate other people into questioning their own sanity. They're using something that, like, isn't necessarily scientific. They may be, like, for example, in the Letitia Wright situation, like, I remember, like, the gene they're talking about was something like, it was like the Luciferian something or whatever.
Oh my God.
And she was like,
yeah.
She was like, oh, interesting that Lucifer is in the name. Some people are like, wait, what? Like, you know, some people are like, what? Like, girl, you crazy? And other people are like, wait, what? Lucifer? They grew up in the church. They grew up in the church or whatever, you know? So it, like, you know, or they don't understand Latin, or I don't know, you know, but like, there's just a lot of ways you could fall victim to this if you don't, you know, if you don't check when it's time to be spiritual and when it's time to realize that science is the best way to go on this.
So,
you know,
actually, I wanted to talk about that too, because it's like, there's this thing in the church, and we call it spiritual discernment, and that's a concept across a lot of different spiritual practices. But I need y'all to actually get in touch with the spirits, because a lot of stuff be bullshit. Like, if you are claiming to commit all of these miracles and healing and people are not being healed, that is not spiritual to me. So this isn't even me being anti-spiritual.
Dr. Sebi.
Listen. I'm saying, I need y'all to stop listening to these charlatans, to these scammers, to these frauds, because that's not the spirit. And if you were connected with the spirit, you would see that that stuff wasn't real. And so this isn't even, for me, at least, and from my point of view, this isn't even an anti-spirituality message. This is more of you telling you to get back in touch with, like, actually talk to your ancestors, actually talk to God, actually talk to the deities that you respect. Because, like, they're not going to have you out here telling you to die and listen to someone who's trying to take your money and watch you die.
I was saying, I completely respect getting guidance from spirituality and spirit.
Exactly.
It's just discerning between spiritual gaslighting, which we just described, and actual spirituality, which is only going to point you towards a long, prosperous, healthy life, you know, and not towards ignoring science and ignoring things that could save your life. So
because in the Bible, since y'all like the Bible so much, and I love this verse in Matthew chapter 7 verses 15 through 20, they say, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? I don't know what that is. Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits, you will know them. I need y'all to actually, if you're going to be doing these spiritual practices, you need to read, you need to actually talk to the spirit. So I'm just really sick and tired of people using spirituality as a vehicle to trick people, because that's what they can see when people are still sick. They can see what they're doing isn't working. Because a lot of these people make a lot of money from telling y'all these lies that you like to hear. But that's enough. I'm being a little aggressive, but it really needs to be said. Maybe open up the Bible. I haven't opened a minute. All right.
I was like, we Bible thumping? This is crazy.
Listen, they keep bringing it up.
Do you want to get into this Twitter nonsense? Yeah, so this actually was one interesting one. I never actually read this tweet, actually. I just heard about it because it was being, like, memed and stuff. But someone said, actually, at Lottie Dot, yeah, said, as Black people, genetically, we are stronger and smarter than everyone else. We are more creative. On December 21st, our real DNA will be unlocked and majority will be able to do things that we thought were fiction. Learn who you are as a people, woman. They want to make us average. So, you know.
You look so stressed out. You look so stressed out.
No, like, I don't know. I just don't know what to say to that. You know, it's just like.
Oh my God. Am I being disrespectful? Should I not laugh at this?
Why did you want to bring that up? Month,
we are turning into X-Men. I'm hoping for telekinesis personally.
But the thing is, people will really say this and be like, oh yeah, see this and say, and well, people will really see this and be like, oh yeah, this is why I don't even need the vaccine, because, you know, Black people are stronger and smarter than everyone anyway. And, we're going to be able to fight this without the vaccine. These are what that's what it starts with, like, talking about some, like, real DNA activating on December 21st. And then it leads to, a cult, like, where everyone's, like, drinking Kool-Aid. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what, it starts with these ideas, and then, like, it could escalate, to...
And that was a lot of Black people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that died in Jonestown. And you have these people manipulating, because Black people are more likely to be spiritual. And the other thing I think that is related to this, because you see, race science, I told you, we really got to let race science go, y'all. Like, we got to really let go of eugenics. This is eugenics. Mm-hmm. We are intelligent and genetically superior. That's eugenics. Eugenics is not real. It's not real. So, and it's like, you don't need to, like, you can love your Blackness, you can love who you are without that. I don't measure my life in comparison to white people. That's foolish to me. This is some white supremacist bullshit. That's what is informing this.
When you as a community have been beaten down so much, your health concerns have been ignored so much, the community has been ravaged by, like, heart disease and things that could have been prevented by equitable healthcare, it becomes easier for you to latch on to, baseless claims mm-hmm. about us being, better than white people, and, like, we're stronger and smarter, and, like, the whole Nick Cannon debacle, where Nick Cannon on his radio show had on a special guest who was sort of saying some things like, oh, Black people genetically, because of our geography and our genetic makeup, we have, better physical ability, and we have higher intelligence, and we're, like, the peak of all races, and we're just objectively better than all the races because of our genetic makeup and all this stuff. Unfortunately, all that does is lead us down a path to pseudoscience and not actually addressing real problems in communities. So yeah, exactly.
Because the problem is still there. You done did all this carrying on and trying to postulate that you better than everyone else, and our community's still suffering. I just find a lot of it really, really strange and counterproductive.
All right, so we're gonna take a break, and we're gonna come back with zeroing in on COVID and the vaccine in the Black community. All right, so we're back and we're going to talk about how the Black community has been hit and severely affected by COVID-19, right? So
in case anyone did not know, the coronavirus has not been kind to Black people. We have been going through it in every way imaginable. And so I think a good way to think about it is like there's the direct effects of the virus. So you have like you catch it, the case spreads, and then you have people dying from it. And then you have people getting the long term conditions from it. Then you have more of the indirect effects, which is going to be the impacts it's having on our quality of education, impacts that it's having on our economic outlooks in terms of like our income and our ability to keep a job, our ability to pay our bills, all of those types of things. So it's been bad in every single way for us. There's high case rates, high death rates, and Black people are more likely to get the long-term conditions.
Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the pandemic, 70% of COVID deaths were accounted for by Black people, actually, in Chicago. 30% all the other races in Chicago. So the death rate amongst African-American communities. And then as it stands today, 1 in 1,000 Black people in the United States have died from the coronavirus. 1 in 1,000. And 1,000 seems like a large number, but that's like 1/1,000th of all the Black people in the United States. And there's already not that many of us. Mm-hmm. So
I think a great way to kind of summarize what's going on is that as we like kind of alluded to in our medical racism section, there have been large disparities that have been brought on by racism experienced by Black people in this country. We experience disparities when it comes to income. We experience disparities when it comes to access to quality and employment. We experience disparities when it comes to getting credit. We experience disparities in every single aspect of like social economic well-being in this country. And so those problems were already severe before going into this virus. And then you have a virus that takes advantage of the fact that we don't have the same access to medical care, that we were already in an economically precarious situation before we got here. And then you have an economic collapse. Like people, Americans, and really the global economy is going through it right now. It's not doing good.
Actually, in Atlanta, which is, fun fact, number one in terms of Black wealth, 50% of Black-owned businesses have currently closed permanently due to the coronavirus in Atlanta. Black businesses that were providing services to the community and helping families provide for themselves that have collapsed because of the the disparate effect on Black communities in particular economically.
Right. And actually, just to supplement that a bit, across the country, Chicago, the University of Chicago Urban Labs actually did a study and they found that minority-owned businesses were particularly at risk for closing down across the entire country. Of course, it's more profound in places where there is a lot of Black business ownership. You're going to see those large numbers. But across the board, Black business owners, first of all, already have a lot of trouble getting to that point. It's harder to get the loans. It's harder to get into that position of being an entrepreneur. That's well documented. But then you already have them at the margins, and then you have this thing that's going to come and knock them out. And so that's why I think a great way of thinking about this is that the coronavirus did not really create new problems. It just exacerbated a lot of the problems that were already here when it comes to Black people in this country. And so that's why, like, dealing with the virus really is an imperative for, if you care about this country at all, is an imperative for the economy of the United States. But it's for sure an imperative for Black people because we have been the worst impacted in every single way by this virus.
It's also imperative for Black mental health.
Cause... Oh, we're going to it, Ms. Psychologist. Yes. Get us together.
No,
it's I also forgot. I almost forgot. Go ahead.
No, it's imperative for Black mental health. It's so important that Black people, well, people in general, are able to connect with one another and sort of commune with one another. We're very social creatures. And our community, Black community, being one of the most severely impacted, we are also more susceptible to the mental effects of isolation, grief due to losing loved ones. Feeling destitute because of losing jobs. There's so many factors that have increased the incidence of mental health issues over the past several months. Also, in general, mental health is declining in the United States right now, like for everybody. Suicide attempts are like 25% up at the moment, and there's just a lot of, we need solutions quickly in the form of science, not just for physical health reasons, also for mental health reasons, because mental health reasons can kill you just the same.
That's still a problem. And I also wanted to bring up one more thing, is the impact that this virus is having on our population that's been imprisoned by the state. And I actually saw this tweet from the author of this book that I highly recommend called Prison by Any Other Name. She's one of the co-authors. Her name is Victoria Law, but she said that she got a letter from a woman that she writes to who's currently in the prison system, who said that some of us wear masks even in our beds, but it feels futile. There is little to do except watch the infection spread and wait my turn to suffer. And so that's something that I definitely wanted to highlight as well, is that one, the prison industrial complex wreaks havoc on our community. It is something that disproportionately affects Black people because it was designed that way. A lot of Black people are in prison and they can't do anything. They can't social distance. They don't have access to proper medical care. And then furthermore, you have a lot of people in the prisons that have HIV, that have these conditions that predispose them to being at risk of dying from the virus. And so you have this super vulnerable group of people. And so it's just truly disgusting, and we need to do something about it. I think we did enough.
All right, we're going to move into our last section, which is basically how we're going to address this mistrust. So let's start with Black figures addressing the mistrust. So we're going to split it between like Black leaders and then Black doctors who are also Black leaders, but Black leaders who are not scientists and then Black leaders who are scientists or doctors. So first, non-scientists. So earlier we were talking about Dr. Sebi, right? And how, you know, he's this con artist, and like a lot of his herbal remedies and health theories are based on pseudoscience and all this. It's interesting that a very popular rapper, Nipsey Hussle, was actually making a documentary about Dr. Sebi before he was unfortunately tragically murdered. So when he was murdered, immediately people started writing articles and saying on different social media sites that, oh, he must have been murdered by the government because he was making this Dr. Sebi documentary and they didn't want certain information about Dr. Sebi and how he cured HIV and like was able to revolutionize health to get out. And of course, this has happened before. Like, we know the government has killed its own citizens, bombed its own citizens, all this stuff. So we're not putting we're not putting this past the government, but we're just saying that, you know, this theory has been debunked. It has been debunked by Nipsey's grandson himself, amongst other members of Nipsey's family, confirmed that it was gang violence. And I just want to emphasize that there's harm in jumping to like these basis conspiracy theories, because we have real issues in communities. Like, addressing those problems is important, and not always going to, oh, the government, whatever. Like, personally, like when people were making, like, you know, had that conspiracy and they jumped to that, like, you know, with no evidence for it whatsoever. This may be like a pet peeve of mine. There's still these, like, you know, conspiracy theories, and people are even saying, oh, they must have hired him to, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, for me, like, it bothers me when someone dies in, like, a heinous, like, horrible way.
Secondary to like, the narrative that you want to create.
That's the narrative that you want it to be, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay, you know how to, yeah. You put it in better words than I could. It's just, like, it's, like, how far are we willing to go to sort of like push these, like, you know, Dr. Sebi, like, which has been debunked, and his theories have been debunked. We're willing to like disrespect and like dishonor this man's legacy that he did have,
right? By reducing it to a Dr. Sebi documentary. Exactly. That's what, like, I mean, like, not even saying they killed him for his work. They killed him because that's I'd be mad if that were me and I did all this stuff in the community and y'all said they killed me because I was going to do a documentary about a con artist. That's why they took me
exactly
out.
Like, no.
And also
that nigga took me out because we was beefing, he was hating.
I'm not trying to be mad at you for being skeptical of white people. I'm skeptical of white people too, as far as the white supremacy structure, but like, look at what's actually going on. Stop creating these boogeymans out of things that are easily debunked.
Yeah. And another prominent figure in the Black community, actor Nick Cannon. I don't, what do you call him, a prominent figure? Oh, he's a celebrity. Whatever.
You didn't have
Black
to
people,
do that.
Black people like to.
You didn't have to.
I wasn't even trying to be Sadie. Like, I'm not even trying to, I'm not even doing that. But so actually he took over to like finish this documentary that Nipsey was doing after. And I hear a trailer was released earlier this year, like in April. But I didn't actually see it yet. So, I think the documentary is almost done. I don't know the lean that, Nick Cannon took with this documentary, but I am going to leave a link to like an article on him finishing the documentary and stuff. I don't know exactly, what's going to be in the documentary, if it's going to have like the truth about him, or if it's going to be like this, if there's going to be like, you know, unfactual things in it. But I just like, you know, it's important, you know, when we're talking about non-scientists, like we have Nick Cannon, we have Nipsey, and we have Dr. Sebi, all non-scientists, unfortunately, you know, so it's like, we have to be careful, even though like these people may be well-meaning and may want the best for the Black community. Just be careful about who you trust and like what you see. And just because it's been packaged nicely in a documentary, question the truth, you know, make sure you do your own research and figure out what's really going on, because we don't know if anything in this documentary is going to be factual. And we don't want this, especially if it's coming out like anytime soon, when we have this whole health crisis going on, we don't want it to dissuade people from getting the vaccine or listening to science behind the vaccine, right? So.
And so I would say to do your own research, but learn how to distinguish between what is credible and what is not. And also to evaluate how credibility is being assigned. And so I'm definitely not saying you have to trust science blindly, but you need to be able to deconstruct what's going on. And I know that's something that people are capable of. I want y'all to be more skeptical is kind of what I think is what I want. It's like, yeah, you need to be reading lots of different things and being able to understand the premises that are informing those arguments and if there's actually evidence behind those premises. And if there is clearly, if someone, the crux of their argument is based on something that did not happen, the argument is invalid. You don't have to listen to us. You don't have to listen to Nipsey. You don't have to even listen to the scientists uncritically. Do not listen to anyone uncritically. And that spiritual discernment, again, is going to help you out. Theories change because you get new information, and that is a part of the human experience, and it's good. But yeah, hopefully that made some type of sense.
Yeah, so another figure in the Black community that we wanted to mention, who has tried to make some efforts to improve the perception of the vaccine in the Black community, is President Obama. And he actually offered, in an interview, he volunteered to take the vaccine on live television to help the American public have more trust in the science behind the vaccine and the fact that it's actually going to work. He mentions the Tuskegee experiments and how, you know, that's one reason why it's valid that African Americans have distrust in the U.S. medical system. But he also goes on to emphasize that because of vaccines, that's why we don't have things like polio anymore. And he's like, I believe he wants to help, knowing that a lot of Black people regard him in a certain way and regard him as an intelligent person, as someone who has a lot of experience with politics and has a lot of experience with dealing with white supremacy in politics. Him taking this vaccine would kind of like maybe dispel some of their worries. And I kind of see it as a positive. Like, I think that it's, and then also after he made this offer, there's other presidents, I think President Bush and was it Clinton, all said that they were going to join him after he made this offer. So I think it could be positive. I mean, will it be sort of like gimmicky and showy and like, but it might be, it could still be a positive in general for Trump.
I mean, I think the point of it is to be a spectacle. And I feel like, I think Obama's trying to do a good thing. I hope that the point of it is to try to show like a good faith of like, we're doing the best that we can in this virus, which I agree with you is a good thing. I hope it doesn't backfire. Yeah. Obama is not a trustworthy person to a segment of the Black population for very justifiable reasons.
I mean, none of the presidents.
Go off. You're right. None of the presidents are trustworthy. You're right.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, they're either gonna do it or they're not, and like, I don't think it's better if they do.
That's right. Right.
I think what's important is that these leaders, like presidents and things like that, aside from just taking the vaccine on camera, they also emphasize simple science that trusted leaders have also been brought into the community. Like, for example, we need 70% of the population to be vaccinated to achieve the herd immunity that we need to really be protected mm-hmm. from this pandemic panoramic. Mm-hmm. And it's important that these leaders like are also emphasizing things like that and the science behind why we were able to conduct these clinical trials so quickly and get out a vaccine so quickly, and emphasize that all the precautions were taken. It's not going to be like, it's not going to turn you into a mutant. You're not getting injected with a chip. Like, there's real science behind why we were able to do this so quickly. And thank God that we were, because it's wreaking havoc on the world. But besides Black leaders and leaders who are non-scientists, of course, it's extremely important. And we feel that Black scientists address this mistrust. So, for example, Dr. Uche Blackstock, which we have mentioned in our second episode. Dr. Uche Blackstock, she's the founder of our Org of the Week for our second episode, Advancing Health Equity. She actually had an IG post that I saw the other day where mm-hmm. she was really excited because somebody had told her about their client in the hospital. Let me pull up the screenshot I took real quick. Mm-hmm. So basically, she reposted this tweet that said, "I was just in the patient's room and he was watching Dr. Uche Blackstock on MSNBC. He said he was unsure about the vaccine until he saw a Black doctor on TV talking about it." And she was just she's reposted it and said how happy and humbled she was, and it's really why we need Black people in healthcare and in public health, not just Black doctors, but like Black public health professionals who are getting on the TVs and writing these articles and pushing media out to Black communities that reaffirm that they can trust the vaccine, they can trust the science behind it, and we are going to be okay.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really amazing thing that Black people in medicine are coming together to talk about, to kind of unpack and remove some of the mystery behind how the trials were conducted, and like the science behind vaccines themselves and how this particular vaccine was developed. Like, the reason that it was developed fast, everyone, lots of people like, why it's rushed and blah, blah, blah. Well, it was rushed in the sense that they wanted it to come out faster, but literally there was a international effort that was constantly funded by multiple very wealthy people to make sure that the vaccine was viable, because yeah. it's literally a global socioeconomic problem right now. It's a disaster. American,
so they're putting right. a lot of money into
in an unprecedented way. Quickly. And yeah. so, and they actually, despite there being a lot of skepticism in our community, Black healthcare workers collaborated with their communities to make sure that Black people were included in the trial. Because I remember everyone was talking about, see, this is why we need science, I'm trying my hardest to be careful how I communicate this. I don't mean to come off as condescending, and I apologize if I did that at any point in this episode. But like, you know, lots of people are really skeptical of it. But like, the way that the vaccine works, there may not be a genetic difference with Black people, but like, we're predisposed to certain things because of racism and the life that we live that puts stress on our body in certain ways, things that are kind of Black problems because of racism in the medical industry. And so it's important that we were included in these trials to see how the vaccine interacted with some of the things we had going on with our bodies. And there were Black people in the trials. Of course, there could have been more, but there were Black people in the trials thanks to the work of Black medical workers who were making sure, like, again, building trust in the community and meeting people where they were at and talking about, because again, I get it too. Both of us have talked about it. The medical industry is shady. The government is downright atrocious. I get that. But like, where we're still able to understand how the mechanisms that's driving certain things so that we can get the best scenario, we can get the best outcome for ourselves. And it's also important that the vaccine ends up being accessible to us. And there's been lots of people who are working to make sure that are prioritizing that and talking about that. And even Obama in the interview, he talked about the importance of making sure that this was accessible to Black people, because Black people have been so disproportionately impacted by this virus. And so it's really, really important work that a lot of Black people in the medical industry have risen to the task for, and we really appreciate them.
You're right. So finally, to conclude, we just want to talk about potential discrimination and the vaccine administration. Of course, the vaccine is going to be limited at first. Of course, they're going to pump it out as quickly as they can, but there's going to be people who have to be first in line to get it. Of course, we can't all get it at once. There's not nearly enough resources for that. It's going to be a slow, over the next couple of years, actually, that people are going to be getting the vaccine, right? So as it stands right now, it's looking like the first up is going to be frontline workers, such as nurses and healthcare professionals, and then the most vulnerable populations, such as nursing home residents. And so the question becomes, who's next? After the frontline workers, after nursing home residents, who will it be? So actually, there's an article that came out that said that, oh, it's actually possible that after the most vulnerable, we're going to have financial workers be the next in line, because finance is such an important thing in the United States, especially. It's definitely an important thing in a capitalist system. And maybe bankers and bank tellers and people who have to do with a lot of the most important financial sectors of our economy will be next in line, so that they can do their jobs more easily. That whole arena can start running more efficiently again. So then, you know, that sort of makes people think, okay, how will this vaccine be distributed, and what will be like the hierarchy in determining like who gets it first? If people are already speculating that like bank workers may be the next in line after nursing home residents, does that mean that like certain other very economically prosperous fields may be next in line, like over people who were actually more vulnerable to getting very sick from the virus? Like, you know, will athletes be next because they make so much money and stimulate the economy so much? Will entertainers be given privilege because they have class status, they have money maybe to buy their way,
and they produce a lot of money for their controllers,
and they produce a lot of money, you know? So who's going to be next, and like will we see like a sort of hierarchy that's based on class and based in like socioeconomic status, and not necessarily an equitable, fair, and evenly distributed like rollout that has special attention to vulnerable populations who need it more urgently first for literally their health and to save their life, not to generate and stimulate the economy, right?
Right. And I definitely, on that class point, another concern that I have is possibly the vaccine being used as a way to open things up sooner than they should. Because like, even with the vaccine, it's going to be a time period to us getting to that point of herd immunity. And it's not like we could just like, we take the vaccine, mask off, everything's back to normal. Like, there still needs to be a transition process. And I'm worried, since there already seems to be an obsession with profit and getting back to normalcy as quickly as possible, I hope that through organizing, through some other means, we can avoid that pitfall of like being in a rush to get back to normal so quickly that we screw up something that could have been like, it could have been like a month process, and then we turn it into something that's even longer and causes more people to suffer. And
so, like what's already happened.
Exactly. Like what happened.
Quarantine until April.
Right.
We're supposed to quarantine until April, but now it's December and we're like, my life is wasting away. But other people that we might feel like maybe up first? Of course, I'm thinking entertainers might be up first.
And for sure, all essential workers. So that's our transportation workers, food service people, healthcare people, you know, all of that. People who work in service. Yeah, in general.
Earlier, you were talking about how people who are incarcerated are so severely affected. I wonder how quickly they may be afforded access to the vaccine. Actually, they should probably be one of the first people
to get it. I would agree with that. I'm very concerned about how that's going to go.
But they really need it.
You know, I feel like the vaccine would help, but like it needs to happen in conjunction with other things that they're not going to do, because they hate incarcerated people in this country.
And you wonder, of course, right now they sort of try to contain the virus within the jails by preventing in-person visitation, which is another thing that's like sort of wreaking havoc on, you know, the mental health of the these communities. But even with that, like, you know, the virus is still able to, like, once it breathes like in large numbers in prisons, because it gets in through
the prison guards.
Worker or a guard or whoever, then it transfers back out to the communities. And so it's like, it's actually, I mean, it wouldn't just serve these populations well, it would serve the entire population of the U.S. well to focus on incarcerated people as some of the first people who get access to this vaccine, I believe.
And you know, I know I heard people joke about let them go first, but I feel like Black people as an entire group need to be first on the line. This is like, even if you are privileged enough to be able to social distance and work from home and all that type of stuff, someone that lives in your household might not. Someone very, very likely, someone that lives in your household is an essential worker. That's just the way that the numbers roll out. I think that like getting Black people as much protection as possible is definitely a priority from my point of view.
I kind of really doubt that there's going to be any racial criteria for getting the vaccine first.
How you could do it, like that's how I said it, is like, if anyone in your household is an essential worker or something, like how, like some of these like class things are going to end up being a lot of Black people.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. So hopefully we will see a sensible rollout that focuses on vulnerable populations. And as a result, a lot of Black people who are vulnerable will end up being in those groups. But plot twist, what if they do say that Black people have to do it first? And what if they say it's because they saw what happened in Atlanta? They saw us out here wilding and they say we have no self-control. they saw us in the close. Not me, like I be at home. But like people really be in the clubs.
They saw Atlanta. Yes, they be out there.
What if they saw Atlanta and they're like, "Yeah, these Black people gonna need it first because no, they clearly, saw they can't that, stay the ass inside."
What was it, Jeezy and Gucci Mane? They saw that and they said, "Oh no, we gotta get it. Jeezy. We gotta get it to the Negroes immediately."
But they were far apart. Jeezy and Gucci were far apart.
No, I'm
they?
Talking about the after party thing.
With all the after party,
where everybody was all up on top. And there was no social distancing. There was no mask. I don't know what the hell. And it's crazy. Like, I don't know how to play it. Because it's like, that might end up being a good thing. It's rooted in racism, for sure. It's like that Black people are deficient.
it's not going to happen.
No, but they I have noticed for sure in the news coverage that there has been definitely a concentration on how to win over Black people for the vaccine. Multiple people in the healthcare industry are concerned about that. And I think it's good that they're taking it seriously.
All I know is as soon as they call my name, I'm going to be at the front of the line. I'm going to be in there because I am ready to get out of this shit. Like, no, I'm ready to get out of this shit. So I don't care what group they put me in. I'm going to be there.
Yeah, I feel like if you feel inclined, like getting involved in some of these organizations that are making sure that Black people have access to some of these life-saving interventions is definitely very important work. And that's something that we have always been amazing at doing, is even when we don't have the institutional power, we can organize and make stuff happen. And so I definitely would recommend that to folks. And I also wanted to highlight lastly that, like, I feel like the AIDS epidemic is definitely something that we could learn from in this situation, because like a big part of that, first of all, like how condoms are everywhere, that's because of the advocacy of queer Black people. And so that's more to speaking to our organizational power. But like a big part of why HIV is still a problem to this day is because of lack of adequate access to antiviral medication amongst the Black community. That's something that we can definitely learn from, and making sure that this is something that is completely accessible to us. And I think it's definitely a very worthy cause. And so,
yeah. All right. I feel like we did enough. We explained to you medical racism. We explained the disease-related conspiracy theories. We explained the impact of COVID-19 on the Black community, how Black leaders and healthcare professionals are trying to ameliorate, my favorite word.
Yes.
The trust and health science in the U.S. And hopefully you guys got all the food for thought you need, and you're able to evaluate intelligently whether or not you should take the vaccine when it comes out, and you can make a decision for yourself. Everything that we referenced in this entire episode is going to be in the show notes. All of the articles and studies and everything is going to be in the show notes, so check any of those out if you want any more information. And with that, the Absolutely Ghetto Org of the Week.
So the Absolutely Ghetto Org of the Week will be Black Doctors Org. So BDO is the leading health and wellness destination for people of color. They leverage culture, content, and technology to transform people's lives for the better. Editorially, BDO shares culturally relevant tips and strategies on health, wellness, lifestyle, and longevity. And so we are very happy about the work that they are doing. We wanted to shout it out and lift it up, especially in relation to the long-ass conversation we just had. Ahead and check them out at blackdoctor.org. Yeah.
Yes, and we're going to link their Instagram and Twitter, too, as we always do. So you can check them out on social media and get involved if you want. Oh, I left a little bonus here at the end. So there are some initiatives that have been popping up, of course, throughout this whole pandemic that have been focused on addressing some of the disparities in minority communities. So I'm just going to shout a couple of them out. So, for example, the Black Arizona COVID-19 Task Force is rolling out measures to address food security, residential resources, job security, small business stabilization, and voter retention in the aftermath of COVID-19 in Arizona. We have the New York City Department of Health is actually concentrating testing in neighborhoods with low testing numbers and high rates of COVID-19 positivity. So obviously that's going to be a lot of Black communities. So, and then we also have the Michigan Public Health Institute, and they talk about how the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated racial disparities in Michigan's justice system, and they're working to reveal how incarceration accelerates the spread of a coronavirus. So that's just a few initiatives that have popped up. As much as the system is often designed to oppress us and to destroy us, there are organizations that are doing good things. So I want to acknowledge some of those organizations and public health entities. And yeah, we just hope to continue to see positive programming and truthful programming come out about the vaccine, and we hope that it's going to come quickly.
Yes. All right.
Yeah, so I think that's it.
Yeah, that we did more than enough. Thank you for staying to the end. We appreciate y'all and hope you got something out of it, and feel free to leave any comments on our socials or whatever you feel is the right avenue to do that. But yes, this is definitely a discussion, but we just wanted to lay some things out and give people some more resources that they could use to work through their own personal decisions of what is going to be best for their health. Thank you so much.
Stay ghetto.
Stay ghetto, y'all. Bye.
Bye. This is the Absolute Ghetto.